welcome you in to another episode of Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. I am Dan Canobio. He is the former 140-pound world champion. He is a man who ran a half marathon at his own will, did it on his own accord, and he finished in the top percentage of ages 40 to 44. Chris, how does that feel?
Well, I finished top in front of all ages, actually. I was in the top 10.
Oh, I only navigated towards the 40 to 44 now, because that's your age group now.
Yeah. Well, I was number two in my age group. But actually, my age group is pretty solid when it comes to running. Generally, a lot of times, these non-professional races, you got a lot of 40-year-olds who are been running a long time. My first half marathon. Broke top 10, which didn't really expect to do that. But it was funny. I'm like mile 9 or so. And there were some switchbacks, so I could see who was coming back. And I'm starting now. I'm like, all right, that guy's number one, obviously. He's way ahead. That guy, he beat me by like 20 minutes, the guy who was number one. And then I'm like, that's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm like, oh, I'm number 13.
Yeah. Lucky number 13.
I'm like, hmm. And then I got overtaken by somebody. I'm like, all right, I'm number 14. And I'm like, top 15 is cool. Top 15 is cool. But then the competitor in me, which never fails, never dies, goes, yeah, we could pass this guy. We could pass that guy. Man, we could break top 10. And I'd literally just made 10. I thought I didn't make it. I was like, I can get it. And then, you know, the scores came out and I was like, I go up to new. And if you get in the top of your age bracket, you get a mug. You get a pint glass with the
what'd the you fill that with afterwards?
Beer. So I get there and I'm like, oh, you know, boom. They're like, oh, you took second age group. Great. I was like, what was I overall? And she's like, looking. She's like, what's your bib number? And I'm like, boom. She's like, oh, number 10. I was like, oh
damn.
Top 10.
Top nice. 10 at age nice. 40. First marathon, half marathon. Just that's what CA does. I was
and no, I will
in.
Not do a marathon. I will not do a marathon.
Maybe. Never say never.
No.
New York City Marathon. No, I'll run. I'll, you know, they have those sponsors where someone can run alongside you for a few of it. I would love to be that guy.
For a few of it? For a few steps?
Like a block. One New York City block. I'd be willing to do that for some type of charity of your choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's actually, maybe we can get a Inside Boxing Live. Bib going.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. I was snowed in upstate New York. Wasn't a lot of fights on this weekend. I actually turned on the Misfits event. That's how desperate I was for some type of boxing.
Yikes.
And it was the arena was evacuated. There was some type of bomb threat that apparently one of the other creators or something. So that was going on. Todd Grisham, our friend, was dealing with a bomb threat. I did watch a little of the afternoon boxing. Saw Dalton Smith knock out Chan Zepeda with a body shot in the fifth round. Campbell Hatton, who everyone seems to love to hate, lost a thriller of a fight. So that was a domestic fight over in the UK. Wasn't paying too much close attention to that. But it is fight week now. It is fight week for Zoo and Fondora. It is fight Let's week go. For PPV.com. PPV.com is your premier place to order live pay-per-view events starting this week. On Saturday night, we will be in attendance. We will be in the live chat alongside Jim Lampley, alongside Lance Pugmire. Me and Chris will be in there. We will be on the premises in Las Vegas. It is the best way to order fights. You can stream it on your phone. You can stream it on your tablet. You can stream it on your big screen TV. No subscription. So you'll never be asked for a subscription. You sign up. You order the fight. You watch the fight. You interact with the live chat. And you have a grand old time, and we're kicking off Zoo versus Fondora Fight Week by giving away one free pay-per-view every day starting on Monday. And in order to get into this giveaway, you have to be following PPV.com on Twitter/X and Instagram. And then keep it locked to our socials for different prompts every day. We're starting it off Monday, giving away one free pay-per-view Monday through Friday. And then Saturday night, we'll all have a grand old time in the live interactive chat.
People love free. I've heard that. So
free 99.
Giveaways, free. A lot of people say that, you know, that's saying it's if it's free, it's for me. So we have the best fans. We always say that. So very, very happy to give you guys whatever opportunities you can get to watch some fights.
And PPV is very generous. PPV.com, very generous. Not just one. We're going to give away five. We're going to do it one every single day to get you worked up into a lather. And no, I will not be accepting any DMs I will not be accepting any offers. I'm accepting any bribes because some of those.
I will. You guys can hit me up.
Because some of those came my way for Canelo Canelo Charlo and Spence Crawford, which we did this for. So shout out to PPV.com. Order the fight through PPV.com. Join us and potentially win a free fight. All right, Chris, let's get into it. Our next time you hear from us won't be till Friday. So I wanted to spend today's episode kind of getting a little deeper into the weeds when it comes to Zoo and Fundora and when it comes to Rolly and Pitbull. We're going to start with the Zoo Fundora fight. You know by now that Fundora is a late replacement, although he doesn't like to be called a late replacement, but that's just what he is. He is a guy that was top five at 154 pounds and a worthy opponent, especially on 10 days' notice. Let's start with Tim Zoo, 24-0, 17 knockouts. This is his fourth fight in a 12-month span, very active. He had that cancellation with Jermell Charlo and said, you know what? I'm not going to sit around and wait anymore for these Americans to fight. I'm going to take my career into my own hands and fight four times in 12 months. Look what that did for Anthony Joshua. And it's been a very good thing for Tim Zoo because he's got wins over Tony Harrison, stopped him in the ninth round. Ocampo stopped him in the first. Mendoza, he unanimous decision, but he beat him up all over the ring. For Tim Zoo, he's been very active. He's building his profile, and he's also getting better inside of the ring, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like his mentality, and we've said it on our air before. They're not waiting around, the staying busy, doing things that a lot of other fighters aren't doing. Like you said, taking his career into his own hands. I really love the fact that he moved out to Las Vegas for this training camp, put himself in a very uncomfortable position to get ready for the fight. He's going to be in Vegas, fights in Vegas. Let me train there. He's going to get great sparring while he's there, of course. So I like the way he moves. Also, I like the way he talks, and because he backs it up, man. A lot of these interviews, he says, he's just like, man, he's a no nonsense guy. Probably very similar to how his father was. Just get in there and fight me. I want to fight everybody. You know, he's calling these guys, saying this guy is complaining, he doesn't want to fight me. This guy doesn't fight. Yeah, listen, I respect that. But he stays busy. He's not waiting around. So I think this is, you know, his breakout opportunity to crash land over here in the States. With a big win here, man. I mean, Zoo SA, right? That's what they're calling it. He has the opportunity to take over a little bit, especially at 154. But this is an interesting matchup.
He has the opportunity to potentially fight Terrence Crawford, and I don't know how much taking over he'll do after that. He might be making his bank account a little fatter here, but that's. That's to discuss after the fight with Fundora, because right. I do think Fundora poses some tricky aspects to this fight. I wouldn't say that Zoo is a walkover, although Zoo is a minus 525 favorite, according to DraftKings Sportsbook right now. Zoo was a much bigger favorite over Keith Thurman. And I enjoyed Zoo's trash talking to Thurman when he didn't really think much of Keith Thurman. He was just like, dude, you don't even have the hunger anymore. And it turned out he didn't have the hunger, but he just couldn't do it in terms of the physicality of it for Thurman. And then steps Fundora. But just to go over some punch stats, so maybe you want to figure out how to bet on this fight or what you want to wager on this. If you want to do that, use DraftKings Sportsbook. Last nine fights for Tim Zoo. He's averaging 50.6 punches a round. That's right around the 154 average in terms of output. He's limiting his opponents to 38 punches around, Chris. So he's outpacing his opponents. The power is what Tim Zoo is known for. He lands 41% of his power shots. And what I think is one of his calling cards, and what I think he's going to really use in this fight because of just the build of Sebastian Fundora, 34% of Tim Zoo's landed punches are body shots. I think the body punching is going to be huge in this fight.
Those are Chris Algieri numbers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Body shot percentage, high percentage of body shots landed. That's a throwback to my old days. But yeah, no, I'm really impressed with Tim Zoo. I think fundamentally, in terms of his skill set, I think he's probably one of the best, if not the best fighter to come out of Australia. He has a lot of potential. I really like what he does. Fundamentals work from the beginning.
I'm gonna ask him that, Chris. Talk to him tomorrow.
Do ask him that and tell him that I said that. I do believe fundamentally he is the best Australian fighter, or the best fighter come out of Australia. Because a lot of times Australian guys, not knocking them, but a lot of times they're they're tough, rough customers, and they just come kind of come forward, and they don't put up numbers the way that you just said that Tim Zoo is able to do. He works behind his jab. He closes the distance. He has some defense. He goes to the body. He mixes up his punches really well, especially the right hand. He's got good power. He's physically strong. I like a lot from what I've seen from Tim Zoo, and I do believe he has an opportunity, like we'd said earlier, that he could really be a breakout star here. He's a fan-friendly style, man. I enjoy watching his fights. And I think he has everything else going for him, too. Plus, he has the legacy of his father, which, you know, I think he's trying to separate himself and make himself his own man. And he's done a good job at that. But listen, man, if your father's close to you, I mean, we're not going to pretend that's not true. You know, we're not going to pretend that's not a reality. Because, I mean, I think a lot of our fans do know, because our fans are very, very well read on boxing. But I think a lot of people nowadays may not even remember, you know, how Costas was or how good he was. So for you people at home, if you don't know who Costas is, go look him up. Go watch his videos. Go watch his old fights. Fantastic fighter.
Go watch when he knocked Zab Judah into a stupor.
I hate that fight.
And he didn't know where he was. He pointed at the ref. Stanky leg went down.
Jay Nady.
Yeah, that was...
Then he attacked Nady. Yeah, I hate that fight because I was such a huge Zab fan at that time. And I was rooting for Zab that night, and Costas just iced him with a right hand. Yeah.
I don't think he has much of a relationship with his dad. I don't know for sure.
I don't see
his dad around. I don't see him mentioning his dad. There's no content. You would think that Premier Boxing Champions, Amazon, whoever, would do some type of father-son interview, other than that. Maybe he is trying to be his own man. I don't know the deal with that. Maybe I'll sniff around in Las Vegas and be the Mark Kriegel father-son guy for Inside Boxing Live. But for Tim Zoo, you talk about his defense, too. Well-rounded fighter, not just the brawler, Chris. Opponents land only 8.6 punches per round. For some context, you look over at Sebastian Fundora. Fundora is getting hit with 13 power punches a round. So the defense is on the side of Tim Zoo. If there's one shortcoming for Tim Zoo, is that he puts a jab out there, but he doesn't really land it. 15% connect rate with the jab. Zoo likes to throw power shots, likes to throw body shots. Do you think he'll get into a little bit of trouble as he progresses here at 154? If he takes on a Crawford or some of these other names at 154, if he doesn't really commit to the jab?
I do, and I see that as the biggest pitfall for him in terms of how he's able to cross that critical distance line to get in the position to throw those power shots. He likes to be inside, but he does actually jab very well. But he does it from a distance that's pretty close. He's like a mid-range jabber. He does not jab from the outside into the inside, like I said, crossing over that critical distance line. And a lot of times he tends to pause on the outside. He'll cover up, he'll pause, put his hands up. And there's opportunities for his opponents to get off. We saw that with Tony Harrison, who was able to land a lot of jabs in that fight, was able to keep Zoo at bay and touch him up with that jab quite a bit once he was trying to cross over that distance, because he does not jab over the line. So there's an issue that could show up, especially as guys get better and guys have a more fundamental jab. But in this fight, I don't see that, because Fundora does not use his jab. Fundora likes to actually fight exactly the same way that Zoo does. He likes to fight in the inside, likes to let his hands go. But the problem with Fundora is he does not, like you said, does not have the defense that Zoo has or the durability. You know, Zoo's been down, but Fundora's been out. So it's a very, very different situation in terms of you know, their durability, their chin, and we'll get more into that later when we talk about my power stats.
Yes, I talk about Fundora, southpaw, and that's a big part of the narrative.
But
of this
doesn't fight like
now.
One.
I know.
But doesn't fight like one.
Doesn't fight like a southpaw. Just it's literally just going to be a southpaw stance, looking at Zoo. Doesn't jab and doesn't really fight like a southpaw. So I think Zoo can get away with the lack of a jab in this fight. But if he's going to fight Crawford, he's going to fight some of these other guys at 154, going to have to start being a little more, put a little more emphasis on that jab. Now, Chris, they do share a common opponent. Both of these guys, Zoo and Fundora, have fought Carlos Ocampo. Zoo took him out in one round. Fundora went the distance. In that fight, it was for Fundora. He had a long string of knockouts, and he went the distance for like the first time in like five fights. So if you're interested in common opponents, it looks like Zoo took out Ocampo, and Fundora could not.
And he actually did it faster than Errol Spence did as well. Ocampo was a KO victim of Errol Spence in the first round with a nasty, nasty body shot. But it was at the end of the round. Zoo did it a little bit earlier, beat him about a minute and 15 or something like that. So, yeah, that's a very interesting thought there to think about, you know, the common opponents. And they both fought at 154. Actually, Errol fought him at 147. But
right.
Yeah, so that a lot of the comparisons can be taken from that as well. But you can't just bet on that. I want to touch one thing on the southpaw stance issue, or non-issue. As a fighter, so if he doesn't fight, and we say he doesn't fight like a southpaw, he still throws punches, power punches from a southpaw stance. So it's the mirror image, and that makes the angle of the way the power punches come at you different. And so when you're used to throwing certain punches, you're like, okay, well, I'm gonna be safe if my head is on this side. I'm gonna be safe if my head's on this side when I do this punch or that punch. So that's the adjustment that needs to be made from Tim Tszyu, because if he's thinking about everything orthodox, he might be thinking, all right, when I throw my right hand, I got to get my head to that outside. Don't have to think as much about having that hand up as possible. But now he does, because right hooks come from a position where you can run into them when you're throwing right hands. That's that southpaw check hook, which is such a dangerous punch. And that's something that Tszyu, he's a very good right-hand puncher, and he also doubles and triples up that thing. So there's going to be opportunities for that check hook to land if Tszyu hasn't made the strategic adjustment dealing with a punch coming from the southpaw position, whether or not Fedora fights as a traditional southpaw.
That's what makes this fight interesting to me. Mm-hmm. That's what makes this a little slice of intrigue, throwing a 6'5" southpaw at you 10 days before the fight. So for Tim Tszyu, he's much more active over the last 12 months. He lands his power shots at a very high clip, doesn't get hit too much with power, but needs to jab a little bit more. That's the story on Tim Tszyu. Let's go over to Sebastian Fundor, 21-1, coming off of that KO loss to Brian Mendoza. That was 350 days ago. It's the longest layoff of Fundora's career. Makes sense. You get knocked out like that, you should take some time off. Also, PBC just simply wasn't putting on too many fights towards the end of the year or earlier this year. The one draw, that was with Jermonte Clark way back in 2019. I remember watching that on FS1. He's got wins over Erickson Lubin, which I think is a very impressive win. Sergio Garcia, Jorge Cota, and the Carlos Ocampo fight that we just talked about. Fedora, this is a guy that was on a big-time trajectory. PBC was behind him. Every network that he fought was behind him. They were penciling him in to fight some of these bigger names at 154 because he's a fan-friendly style. He's a nice kid. He's marketable. And then he was winning the fight against Mendoza. He was outlanding him in every category. I think he was up on all three scorecards for the judges. He gets absolutely caught and knocked out cold, and his career, you would think, was put on hold, or you're going to start thinking about what's next. Now he's in a unification bout. But, man, this guy, if he just didn't got out of the way of those shots from Mendoza, which you can't just say that if he didn't, because he did. I mean, this guy that was on pace to fight a Tim Tszyu, on pace to fight some out of 154.
Yeah. Fundora is interesting. I mean, he's a great kid. We actually got to interview him last week, him and his sister, Gabriella, on Pro Box TV. And I mean, fantastic. And heart of a champion, this fight came up. And was like, yeah, let's take it. Didn't
10
think
minutes,
about
he
it.
Said.
Yeah,
10 minutes.
That's awesome. I love seeing that. The interesting caveat, even though this is the last one replacement, he was already on the card to fight Sergey Bohochek for the WBC title. So it's not like we're pulling somebody off the couch. We're pulling in someone who was literally fighting the exact same night. So he was angling, getting himself peaked for the specific night, for the exact same night that he's stepping into the main event. So I think that's a really important caveat to think about. Even though it's a 10 days notice fight, I think it really helps Fundora, being that he's 6'5" and a southpaw and stepping in, and Tszyu has been preparing for a 5'8" welterweight who's a righty and who hasn't fought in 3 years. So now you got this guy. Yeah, he hasn't fought in a year, and his last fight was a KO loss, but he's a lot more active. He's a lot younger and he's a lot hungrier. So there's many aspects to what Fundora brings to the table that can trick up a Tim Tszyu. And, you know, Thurman was a certain type of puzzle. Fundora is a different kind of puzzle. And to make that adjustment last minute, I think it speaks to both these guys that they both decided, they were like, okay, let's fight each other. I think Tim would have fought anybody. You could have put in King Kong. I think he still would have taken this opportunity because, like I said, he moved to Vegas. He put his whole training camp here. This is his breakout fight coming to America. Also, I don't think he really has a choice. He's fighting on a big, big card in Amazon. He is not Canelo Alvarez. He is not Terrence Crawford. He can't be like, oh, well, then we'll move the fight. No, he's got to fight. So we didn't really have an opportunity for him. And then Fundora, like I said, I mean, heart of a champion, dude. The kid is like, yeah, let's go. He looked genuinely happy. I interviewed him last Tuesday, I think. Right. It was like the day that he decided that this was going to happen. And he looked genuinely happy for the opportunity. So listen, youthful exuberance is something to speak on, and that can make a difference in fights.
Yeah, no, there's a lot. There's some critics that are like, oh, come on, man. This guy was just knocked out cold by Brian Mendoza last year. But
he's still a contender in this weight class. He's still a contender in this weight class. He was going to fight for the... So, guys, he was going to fight for the WBC title anyway against Bohochek, who's a very, very tough guy and not an easy out. Like, he was willing to go right back into the fray.
But the same critics will say, why is he fighting for the vacant? Because you have to look into the politics of the rankings. He was the next guy up for in the WBC. But I would say, like, he was dominating Mendoza. He was beating Mendoza. Got caught. It's not like, you know, they pulled some guy out of nowhere. You know, Zhu is the favorite, and Zhu should win. So when all things are said and done, if Zhu wins this fight, all right, then the right guy has two of the belts at 154, and then he'll be fighting a Terrence Crawford. For entertainment purposes, this is a much better fight than Keith Thurman. So to the critics that are just really focusing on the fact that Fundora's coming off a KO loss, if all those things I just said happen, then, you know, on March 31st or April 1st, then there on out, if Zhu has two of the belts at 154, boxing is in a very good spot.
Well, if those same critics are guys that were okay with Keith Thurman fighting, then you need to shut up. Like, what are you talking about? If you're critiquing this fight and you weren't critiquing Thurman, then what are we talking about? Listen, if you're critiquing both, I understand that better. But still, I think Fundora is a worthy opponent. Is it the best opponent possible for Tim Zhu right now? I mean, on 10 days' notice? Yeah, actually. Yes. I mean, it really is. I mean, is he going to fight Brian Mendoza again? Is he going to fight Bohochek?
Bohochek might have been better, but no one knows who he is.
Would make sense, but exactly. It's not going to be able to headline this card. But Fundora, like you said earlier, I mean, there was a lot of people behind him. He's an interesting character in the sport. And was on a really nice tear. Bohochek hasn't been. You know, he hasn't. He has a KO loss as well. He lost to Brandon Adams. Got KO'd a few fights ago. He's been on a 6-fight knockout streak since then. No one really super notable, but still, I think this is within 10 days notice. This is probably the best fight that could have been made.
Sebastian Fundora is a +370 underdog according to DraftKings. Fundora by knockout +900.
Wowza. That's honestly, dude, you throw $100 on that? That's not the worst risky bet in the world.
Fundora by decision +700. So they really don't think he's going to win this fight. Interesting.
Neither do I.
Right. I don't know if I'd put my name on that parlay. I haven't done my parlay yet, but I will take a look at those numbers even deeper.
I'll probably still throw $100 on them though. That's a good spread.
So big odds. I have some more numbers for you in case you want to throw down this fight, or in case you just want to have something to talk about at the fight party on Saturday. Fundora averages 70 punches a round. That is a lot of punches. It is 20 more a round than Zhu. He lands 40% of his power shots. Very good clip. He lands 19 power shots a round. The 154 average is 11.
Two power punchers.
90% of their output is power shots between the two of them. Zero jabs in this fight. Fundora opponents land 31% of their power shots. So there is the things you know when you watch a Fundora fight is that his opponents can land their power shots, does not jab at all. 11% accuracy on the jab for Sebastian Fundora. 2 of 18. It only makes up 25% of his output. 42% is the average for 154 in terms of how many of your punches are jabs. So those numbers pretty much tell you what Sebastian Fundora is. Power, he's a lot of punches, no jabs.
Kid likes to scrap, man. That's his mentality. That's what he's coming to do. Listen, it makes for a fun fight. I think this is a more entertaining fight than the Thurman fight. It's different strategically. I think that strategy wise and game plan wise, Thurman was a more difficult opponent for Zhu. I think he was going to have to think more. I think he was going to have to, to battle that experience and the athleticism of Thurman, even at this advanced age. I think Thurman's tricky enough that he could have made that a difficult fight, at least strategically. With Fundora, like you just said, what you see is what you get, baby. He's coming to fight.
Yeah, this guy's he is what he is. He's great TV, and he's going to put up a lot of punches in there, and he's going to throw some things at Zhu that he hasn't seen in quite a while. All right, it's time for Chris's categories. You know them. If you don't, it is power, speed, chin, IQ, and defense. Head-to-head, Tim Zhu versus Sebastian Fundora. We'll start with power.
I'm going Tim Zhu. We talked about the Ocampo fight, the head-to-head comparison. But even on top of that, I think that Zhu is a better puncher. Not even just based on his accuracy, but I think for single shot, I think he has more power.
Speed. Can't handle your speed, son.
So this one I had to really think about. And I talk about it a lot on our air, about guys with long arms who fight on the inside. It takes longer for them to get their punches back to home base, getting back at their head. That opens up a lot of opportunities, a lot of holes in the defense. So I'm going to go with Tim Zhu as well. I think his ability with those shorter punches on the inside, since neither one of them fight on the outside, I'm going to go with Tim Zhu's hand speed because he's got a shorter distance to travel.
Chin, now, one guy just got laid out in his last fight. One guy was down just once in his career, and it was a bunch of fights ago. I think I know where we're going with Chin.
Yeah, no, obviously it's going to be Tim Zhu. Fundora is a guy who got knocked out by Brian Mendoza, who also fought Tim Zhu, and Tim Zhu was never hurt during that fight.
Right, and then we're going to go with IQ in there. Looks like Fundora goes in there to brawl, but can box at times, and then you got Tim Zhu, who we just talked about before, is turning himself into a pretty good, well-rounded fighter.
Yeah, again, I'm going to go with Tim Zhu. This is getting kind of boring, guys, but this is Tim Zhu's Tim Zhu's place again, boxing IQ. He does have a game plan. He does execute. He hasn't really had to switch things up just, you know, so much yet. I'm curious when we are going to have to see that, but he does look like he's well-schooled. I mentioned his fundamentals, and his ability to execute is there. I mean, we saw him down against Gaucha, and he was able to come back and figure out a way to dominate that fight down the stretch. So that shows me his ability to overcome and use his boxing IQ.
So it's a clean sweep. Oh, I didn't ask you defense.
Zhu. Again, the same idea with Fundora with those long arms. Listen, he gets hit, and he doesn't use the jab, and he's 6'5". So there's and I think he's an 81-inch reach, something. Fundora.
80.
So, 80. That's crazy.
It's longer than Usyk's.
That's crazy. Yeah, he's. Yeah. I mean, it's heavyweight. We're looking at heavyweight numbers. 6'5", 80-inch reach is a heavyweight.
You want to hear a fun stat? 9 inches differential between height is the biggest differential in a non-heavyweight fight.
And that's this fight?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a fun little stat.
Zhu is shorter than I thought. He's
5'8 and a half.
He's 5'8 and a half. Yeah, he's shorter than I thought.
Yeah, that's from our guy Lee Groves over at CompuBox, who does unbelievable work behind the scenes. Yeah, biggest differential in height in a non-heavyweight fight.
9 inches. I mean, the longer Fundora fights, the more that record might get broken.
So for defense, you're going with Zhu.
Yes, I'm a clean sweep Zhu. I think he's better at everything in terms of these power stats.
All right, on Friday you'll get our official picks. I think you know where we're leaning, but that is the story on the main event. Fundora and Tim Zhu should be a fun one. Co-main event is a fight we really haven't been talking about because it's not the main event. It's being overlooked by the cancellation. It's being overlooked by Canelo. It's being overlooked by a lot of things that are going on in boxing. But Rolly Romero and Isak Cruz, better known as Pitbull Cruz, will step into the ring at 140 pounds. It's a fight that really doesn't make that much sense at 140, considering Rolly is probably one of the quote-unquote weakest champions at 140. If you look at his run there, and Pitbull has never fought at 140, and he is now in a title fight at 140 pounds. So that's not to say it's not going to be a fun fight. Let's start with Rolly Romero. 15-1 with 13 knockouts, coming off a 10-month layoff. His last fight was the Ismael Barroso debacle. You remember that fight. Tony yep. Weeks stopped it a little too early. And Rolly Romero picks up the win. He had some back problems for a while, Rolly, but he's back into the ring. He's got wins over Barroso with an asterisk, wins over Anthony Yidgett, and win over Jackson Marinez, which is also has an asterisk next to it. If you watched that fight, I thought Marinez won that one. He does have a loss to Tank Davis. Both these guys have losses to Tank Davis. This is the I lost to Tank Davis, how can I get back into the win column type of fight. But for Rolly, he is what he is. His mouth is big. His persona is big, and his power is big. His punching, or his boxing, I should say, leaves a lot to be desired. But Rolly Romero, I enjoy watching him fight.
Yeah, no, I enjoy watching him fight. He's a laugh a minute when he actually is speaking. And listen, I mean, the kid looks the part. He's strong. He's explosive. He talks the talk. I mean, he's got the power. So he's entertaining. There's no doubt about that. Entertainment value of the guy, whether he's speaking or punching, is very, very high. And he's definitely the most undeserving champion at 140, especially right now because there's so many
studs.
Would
you say that most undeserving champion in all of any division?
off the top of my head, yeah, because I really thought he was on his way to lose to Barroso, and was saved. But this fight in general is the most undeserving fight for a title that's possible. You got two guys who, two fights ago, Rolly was 135-pounder fighting Tank Davis. You know, like you said, Cruz has never fought at 140. And he's a really small guy. So you got two guys who are really lightweights fighting for a 140-pound title that that Rolly holds for God knows what reason. So yeah, very undeserving fight for a title, but it's a fun fight. I like this fight, and I think this is a fight that I think you and I, even when this first was announced, the card, because it was Thurman Zhu and people weren't super psyched about it. We weren't that psyched about it. I wasn't that psyched about that fight. But this one, I was like, that's a fun fight. It, you know, shouldn't be for world title, shouldn't be 140, but I'll watch it. I think it'll be entertaining. I mean, you got two guys with entertaining styles. Eza Cruz is very entertaining as well. He's a two-fisted Mexican puncher. So, yeah, I mean, all in, I like this fight. I'm just trying not to think of this as a world title fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one knock on the four belts, right? The four different divisions. So you're getting the fourth one sometimes. One of them is usually like, oh, wait, that guy, like, you know, just played the game and figured out a way to, you know, stay in the rankings for one of these, you know, for this case, it's the WBA with Rolly Romero. And it's funny because Pitbull Cruz, we'll get to him in a second. It's like he says he wants to go back down to 135 after this and fight Tank in a rematch. So it's just like he's taking this fight because Rolly fought Tank. Yeah, it's an opportunity. Rolly fought Tank. You know, Romero was supposed to fight Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia was calling out Pitbull. I mean, the four of those guys are all kind of intertwined, and the fact that you throw a title on it, I mean, it's up to you to decide if that's a legitimate title or not. I do think it will be a fun fight. I do think it's going to end in a knockout. I do think Rolly's going to have his hands full because he had his hands full with Usman Barroso. Some numbers here. Rolly only throws 36 punches around. He only lands 23% of his total punches. But he does have power. He does throw a lot of power shots. 19.5 of his 23 combined punches thrown are power shots. Both these guys throw power. That's the deal with Rolly Romero. Let's go over to Isak Pitbull Cruz. 25-2-1. His last win was over Giovanni Cabrera. That was on the Spence Crawford card. I was not impressed with that. I think Cruz was thinking about a fight with Tank Davis. I think he was thinking about his next fight. I don't know what was going on in there. He was chasing him around the ring, wasn't cutting him off, wasn't doing any of the things that we've grown to love.
Looked uninspired.
Right. Looks very uninspired in that fight. But he's got wins over Diego Magdaleno. If you go back and watch that fight, he nearly took the guy's head off. Yuriorkis Gamboa, vicious. Francisco Vargas. I don't know which Pitbull is going to show up in this fight. I don't know which Pitbull is still out there, because for a while I was like, this guy is a menace at 135 when he was climbing the ranks. But now I really just can't get over that Cabrera fight. And I also can't get over the fact that his whole entire persona is just, oh, I was the guy that took Gervonta the distance and I'll do anything for a rematch.
Yeah, I mean, he's been sitting idle because of that, waiting for that fight. And I think that was a really bad idea. We talked about Tim Zhu, how he didn't want to wait around for anybody. He took his career into his own hands. Cruz is the opposite. To me, that shows a lack of confidence in yourself. If you're not willing to fight other guys, because essentially, why else would you not fight? Because you're worried about something. You're worried about losing. You're worried about losing that opportunity. You're worried about getting hurt. It shows a lack of confidence in your ability to not stay busy and to just wait around for that cash cow that is Tank. So yeah, to your point exactly. Like after that Cabrera fight, really changed my thought process on Isak Cruz. I mean, before that, dude, that guy is trouble for anybody. And then Cabrera showed that he can be outboxed. He can be moved on. Cabrera did show an excellent chin that night, though. He did got hit with some really big bombs. Kid's like a rubber band. He was getting hit with shots and just like, vroom, vroom, and just came whipped right back. The judges had it really close, which was weird. Had a split decision. I didn't think it was that close. But regardless, that fight there makes you think second, gives you a second guess about Isak Cruz.
All right, time for Chris's categories. Head-to-head, Rolly Romero versus Isak Pitbull Cruz. This one should be fun. Let's start with speed. Who's got the speed advantage?
I'm going Rolly. He's very explosive, and he's able to fire from his movement. Like you said, he doesn't throw that many punches. And a guy like him, who's a sprinter, is exactly what he is. They don't keep that busy. You know, he's saving. Then he, bang, he explodes with some big power. So I think in terms of speed, ability to change, you know, change direction, and obviously to generate tremendous power, it's Rolly.
All right, we're going with power. Both these guys are known for knockouts. Both these guys possess a lot of power. Who's got the power, Rich?
So this was a really close one. I was thinking about this. I'm going with Rolly because this is at 140.
Okay.
And I have not seen Cruz at 140. Obviously, he's shown devastating power at 135, especially guys standing in front of him. But in the Cabrera fight, he didn't show that same kind of punch. So moving up a weight class, I'm going to go with the guy who's been there already.
How about Chin? We've seen Rolly down versus Tank. We've seen Rolly down versus Ismael Barroso. Pitbull, can't recall him going down. Don't quote me on that. But when I think of who has the advantage here, I would think Pitbull Cruz, right?
Yeah, I'm going Cruz. I mean, he's a more durable guy for sure. You can just tell by his body type. You know, his name's Pitbull for a reason. He's short, stocky. Those guys with the short necks usually have pretty good chins. And listen, you're a Mexican fighter. Like, he came up fighting a certain kind of way. He's been hit before, and he's not been down, not been stopped. So, and also, you know, granted, Gervonta says, you know, he had a hurt hand when they fought. He still went 12 rounds with Gervonta, who's a killer puncher.
All right, let's go defense. Neither of these guys' calling card is defense. They're guys with holes in their game, guys that come forward. Who's got the better defense of the two?
I'm going Cruz. I think the way that he fights in that small position, that fights in the pocket with his hands up. He's there to get touched, but I don't see him getting hit very clean very often. Because if he did, he would have got KO'd by Tank. I don't care if his hands hurt or not. He's in there, and yeah, he's in there to scrap, and he's in there. But a lot of times, a lot of guys that I've been in the ring with a lot of Mexican fighters, both professionally and in sparring, a lot of times those guys don't get hit as clean as they look. They're very good at slipping, sliding, rolling, just touching, blocking a certain way, partially blocking shots. So I'm going to go with him. I do believe that Rolly gets hit cleaner when he does get hit. Maybe not be as often, but he gets hit clean.
IQ. IQ. It's tough when you... No, I'm not going to say it. IQ.
Yeah, this one, I would almost give it to the third part. I'm going to give it to the ref in this fight. Neither one of these
better
guys...
It better not be Weeks.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, neither one of these guys strike me as having a very high boxing IQ. I'm going to go with Cruz here because he's more controlled. And I think Rolly, I think one of his benefits, one of his assets is that he's so unpredictable. But at the same token, being unpredictable means that your boxing IQ is probably not that high because I think he's just a reactive animal.
He's a late start, Rolly.
He's very explosive. He's very athletic. He's very strong. So I think a lot of his movements come off of his natural talents and abilities and his God-given athleticism. So I think with IQ, I'm going with Cruz. I think he has more of an idea of what he's doing in there, and he's able to execute.
All right, that's our co-main event. I think that should be probably one of the most competitive fights on the card. It's a really good card. We'll have
Hard to pick a winner on that one.
Haven't done that yet. We'll do that on Friday's show. On Friday's show, we'll dive more into the card. We're going to have a ton more of coverage on this card.
And remember, we can always change our minds between now and Friday. Fight weeks are interesting like that.
Right. That's why I like being there. I like to see the fighters. I like to hear some of the stuff that's going on in Vegas, talk to their trainers, all that fun stuff. So we'll have that for you all week long. Broadcast team was revealed for Amazon.
Finally.
It was a really big mystery. Brian Custer will be at the desk. Mauro Ranallo, play-by-play. Joe Goosen and Abner Maris. I do not know who will be the in-ring, like Jim Gray type of role. I do not know who that will be. But that is the broadcast team for Amazon on Prime.
So basically the Showtime guys.
Pretty much, even though Goosen comes from the Fox side of things. I like Joe Goosen a lot. Great guy.
I do too. Excellent.
Hilarious dude. Best stories ever.
The guy
found Mr. T. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
He told us a story just like in passing almost. Oh, yeah, me and my brother Dan Goosen. Yeah, we discovered Mr. T one night. We were in a limo with him. I'm like, what? It was just like as we're walking out of the media room in Vegas, and I was with Dre, formerly at John Boy Media, and he was like, "Wait a second, what did you just say?" Told us the whole story. It was freaking amazing. We have to have him on the show. Yeah, he's a legend, Joe Goosen.
Absolutely, and I think he's good on the mic too. I mean, he's got great insight. He is a trainer, a high level trainer. He's been around for a very long time. Mm. He's very well spoken. I like him actually in that position as a analyst.
Yeah, so that's what's going on in Vegas this weekend. Let's talk about a fight that was announced over the weekend or rumored to be announced, and that is Deontay Wilder is going to be fighting Zhilhai Zhang June 1st in Saudi Arabia. It's supposedly the co-main event to the Archer Beterbiev Dmitry Bivol undisputed fight. This is just came out of nowhere, Wilder versus Zhang. I like the fight.
Love it.
I think it's a perfect fight, crossroads fight. It makes sense in both of their careers. If Wilder wins, he gets back on track. If Zhang wins, he gets back on track. Just didn't see it coming. Didn't think it would be made. But apparently, Saudi really wanted it. And apparently, we're getting it June 1st in Saudi.
This was a fight I really wanted and liked. And I don't think we ever brought it up in the past. I've definitely thought about it. You and I have probably talked about it, probably on air as well. But on the tail end of Wilder's dismal performance against Joe Parker, I cared less about it. It didn't really come up. But now they both lost to Parker. So Parker scraps are going to fight each other. I love what Turkey's doing. One, he's making fights with heavyweights, which we spent 18 months, Dan, lamenting over the lack of heavyweight fights that were happening. In comes Turkey, and now we're getting all the fights that would never have been able to happen stateside. But yeah. I also like the fact that he's giving the losers a chance to fight as well. It was almost like a loser's bracket. He just loves heavyweights so much. He says it over and over again. He loves heavyweights, his favorite division, loves yeah. the big guys, giving them opportunities to fight each other. You know, we live in a world, a society, a boxing society, boxing culture these days where one loss and you're forgotten. And that's really unfortunate, especially with heavyweights. But now, like, we're getting these guys, they're both coming off a loss and they're fighting each other. Hey, guess what? That makes sense. That always makes sense. So I really like this. It's an opportunity for one of these guys to get back in the win column. And it's honestly, this is one of those crossroad type fights. I think the loser here goes to the wayside.
Loser goes home type of fight. Fight that would not.
That's a long flight home from Saudi.
It's long, but you made so much money that you're probably going home with a fat stack.
Dude, I don't care how much money we make. We still don't like to lose.
Yeah, I know. I get it. But this is a loser goes home type of fight that you would see in a WWE. I agree with everything you said. Like, we were talking about how pathetic the heavyweight division was for about 18 months, but now we're getting movement. Now we're seeing Fury versus Usyk. We're seeing Joshua being active. We're seeing Francis Ngannou come in and shake things up. Now we're seeing losers fight each other, which is how it should be. This is a healthy ecosystem of a division. Yes, it takes a guy with very deep pockets and a entire country that's willing to put on these fights and essentially lose money. But it just shows if they were running the right way, if the sport had unlimited funds, I think all divisions would look like this. I'd like the fight a lot. I was excited to see it. It's a lot of big names. I'm kind of really surprised that Wilder is coming back, but they're obviously throwing him a huge bag. For Zhang, I mean, he's 40, 41 years old, so he's got to take anything he can get at this point. I'm happy that it's not Parker Zhang.
Wilder's not young either, man.
He's like 38, 39, too. That's why I was a little surprised that they must be throwing him a nice bag here. But you brought up Parker. Parker was supposed to fight Zhang in a rematch, and I'm glad that that's another thing, too, that His Excellency Turkey Al-Shalik is doing, ripping up rematch clauses, throwing so much money around that these rematch clauses that should never be there in the first place are no longer being implemented. So maybe Parker fights Anthony Joshua. I don't know if that's too risky for Joshua because he's basically waiting out Fury in Usyk. Long story short, heavyweight division is moving, and it's moving in the right direction, which was not the case for a long time here. Another fight that's going to be added to this card, Hrgović versus Dubois, which could be elevated for the full IBF title. We're looking at a card now that has Better BFB Vol as the main event, Wilder versus Zhang co-main event, Hrgović versus Dubois for the IBF title. This, to me, is the best Saudi card of them all.
Agreed. I mean, listen, Hrgović is... This poor guy has been lying in wait on the outside. Like he's one of those guys. He's like you know, in high school, you had like the popular kids. He's like he's like hanging around the circle trying to get in, and they're just not letting him in. A win here, especially if it's impressive, I think really gets him right back into it. It gets him right in there. He was there. He was mandatory challenger. I think he still is the mandatory challenger, but nobody wants to fight him because he's too dangerous, and nobody really knows who he is. With a platform like this, people are going to be watching him. Like you said, this is a great card. A lot of people are going to be tuning in. You're going to get to see how good Hrgović really is because he's freaking excellent. And Dubois, he's so hit or miss, but either way, he's dangerous. The guy
coming
can
off that Miller win,
he can really punch. I mean I saw the power in the Usyk fight, but then, dude, the power shots he was landing on Big Baby, man, left hooks, right hands, he can punch with both hands. He is a very, very strong heavyweight. He's physical, he's big, he is a true super heavyweight. You know, his people believe in him, even though a lot of us ringside watchers don't.
I think he believes it himself. I mean,
yeah, that too.
After staring down Usyk, and what do you want to say there? Did he knock him down? Did he knock him out? I mean, ultimately, there's people that are saying that he quit. But I think he learned a lot about himself, and he proved a lot of people wrong in the Miller fight because Miller was talking so much shit, was in his head, tried to bully him in there.
Miller's a dangerous guy too, man. He's a right, really
and
tough,
Dubois
tough
just
out.
Bullied the bully, and I think that was a big moment for him. So I have no problem with Dubois fighting Hrgović for the IBF title.
I think it's very indicative of the future of the division, these two guys. I think the winner here, if Hrgović goes out there and wins and does it impressively, it's like, yikes, that guy, if he beats him better than Usyk, if he beats him, you know, it's a big deal. If Dubois wins, like you, to your point, Dan, got another confidence boost, and that's a big confidence boost.
Right. It's a guy that was left for dead after the Joe Joyce fight. Right. Just to go back real quick to Wilder Zhang, and I'm going to just, you know me, I'm optimistic, Dan. I pulled over on the side of the road to do a video, a little mini video on Wilder Zhang. It gets me excited. But
dangerous to do in the snow, buddy. You got to be careful.
Well, I was on the way upstate. I pulled off. I went to some the parking lot of some carpet place. People were looking at me, whatever. Wilder Zhang, I'm optimistic, Dan. I think there will be a knockout in it, but I also think it could be a stinker, man. I think it could potentially be a stinker.
I can guarantee that, buddy.
Wilder throws anywhere between 30 to 35 punches. Zhang in his last fight was not inspired against Parker, the biggest fight of his life. There's a pretty good chance this fight absolutely stinks. There's also a chance that it ends with a spectacular knockout. To me, that's heavyweight boxing anyway. So I'm ultimately excited for it, but you know, let's just be a little cautious that this fight can maybe suck.
Yeah, when I first heard about it, I was excited, and then you and I were texting about it. I'm like, oh yeah, I love this fight. And then to your point, I started thinking about these guys and how they match up. I'm like, yeah, these guys are going to be circling each other a lot without throwing punches.
Yeah. Do we want to talk Canelo Benavidez, Chris? Do we want to? Do we have to? Are we obligated to? Should we?
I don't know. I feel like our fans are probably as sick about hearing about it as much as we are.
Oh, how about this?
It.
I'll just run through the headlines and, you know, like the latest. Benavidez makes a massive pitch to Turki Avcılık, His Excellency, a crazy pitch. Like, I will fight. It's the biggest fight in the history of boxing. This is the fight that belongs in your kingdom. If I lose, I will donate my entire purse to a charity of your liking. I just want this fight to happen. He also says that he would accept a rehydration clause. That's the latest from Benavidez over the weekend. Turki Avcılık says, I would rather make Benavidez versus the winner of Better BF Bivol. It's more logical and more realistic than working with Canelo. And keep in mind, just last week, Canelo floated out the 150, and His Excellency comes back and says, you know what, like, I'd rather make Benavidez versus Beterbiev, or Benavidez versus Bivol. Canelo, which I thought was pretty nuts.
Yeah, he kicked Canelo in the ass, that's for sure. But I don't like this because it gets Canelo off the hook from David Benavidez. I want that fight so bad. I think boxing needs that fight. And it certainly seems more and more likely that Canelo just does not want to fight that man. And if you give him a reason, half a reason to get off the hook, he will. And I think this is that reason to get off the hook. And I hate that. So I think that statement from Turki, which was cool because he got to tell Canelo to go F himself. That's great. I think more guys needed to say that to him at some point or anybody. But it also it lets him off the hook of fighting David Benavidez. Now I really don't think it's going to happen.
Do you think Turki, would say that, or you think he knew what Canelo said? Because, like, I don't think he wants to offend Canelo. I don't think he, as a businessman, wouldn't be that smart to completely close the door to Canelo. I don't know. He's a very smart man. I don't know if he would have done that.
I don't think it's outwardly offensive. I think it's you and I reading between the lines. When you say it's too difficult to make, then it's like, well, you're saying because Canelo will. Because you're literally got one guy saying, I will do anything to make this fight. And if it's difficult to make, it means that the other guy is very difficult to deal with to make the fight happen. So it's between the lines kind of situation how difficult, offensive or offended Canelo could be for what Turki said.
Yeah, and if he did know what Canelo said, that just shows, like, yeah, there is a limit to our spending. Like, the $150 million, like, no. Like, there isn't really anyone out there that's worth that type of money up front. There's no fight that's worth that type of money. Like, we
do
have
limits. But also, it could just be a boss move. Be like, yo, you don't tell me how much money I'm paying you for this. You know, like, that's like a mob boss move. It's like, no, listen, I'm in control. So Yeah, you want that? Well, now you're definitely not getting it, and you'll take what I give you.
Yeah. He's also talking about doing a fight at Wembley, cool. sponsored by Riyadh Season, like on one of these 5-on-5s between Matchroom and Queensberry. So
that's going to be in Wembley, the 5-on-5?
No, the 5-on-5 that they're talking about now, that just this week they released all the weights. But he wants to do another one in September, but he wants to stage it at Wembley. What's the biggest knock on Riyadh Season? What's the biggest knock on this whole Saudi movement? Is like, yeah, we're getting the fights we want to see, but we're not getting them at Wembley where they probably belong, not getting them in the UK, not getting them in the US. But, you know, he's listening now, and he's saying, you know what, like, can't hurt to have a 90 or a gate here. Can't hurt to have some fans in attendance. We can make
some
money.
Can't hurt to make some money on these shows.
So maybe that's it. Maybe Turkey actually this weekend, you know, 150 million. No, we can't do that. We actually need fans. And we actually should fill up Wembley Stadium. Like, let's start making some money here.
Yeah, that I like. I like how he's willing to play ball. Yeah, he's the boss, and everyone's gonna listen to whatever he says. But he's like, I don't know. I don't know how much I believe in altruism whenever it's around boxing. But it seems like he's got the right idea in mind, and he's trying to make these fights. Maybe it's completely just selfish, and just like, I want to see these guys fight, so I'm gonna.
He's a huge fan. I know that.
Yeah, Tuck's definitely a huge fan. But, like, is he a fan of these fighters and fights, or is he a fan of the sport of boxing? Does he want to see boxing flourish? That's the real question. If that's the case, then I love what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, he said that he would even be willing and open to the fact that if Fury ever fought Joshua, or if the rematch between Fury and Usyk, he would think about putting it in Wembley or being open to putting it there, which would be awesome. Then we have no reason to ever criticize any of this stuff unless you want to get into the you know, the stuff that's outside of the ring. But that's the latest headlines there. We'll quickly go through the weekend schedule. So a shit ton of boxing on this weekend. This is what boxing does. None this past weekend. I'm searching out Misfit Boxing. I'm watching a guy in Dalton Smith who I think is going to be great at the domestic level. Don't know what it'll be at the world level. You know, I'm just looking for a fight. I'm looking for anything. I was watching all like the Furies on Netflix because I just had to scratch that itch. But this weekend, we got fights all over the place. We got top ranked fights. We got overtime boxing. We have Golden Boy Boxing. And also, we have the PPV.com main event between Zhu and Fandora. Oscar Valdez is in the ring this weekend, Chris, fighting Liam Wilson. Valdez, you know Oscar Valdez. He's lost of his last three. Navarrete and Shakur, blood and guts type of fighter. I want to know what he's looking to get out of the rest of his career. As for Wilson, he is famous for nearly beating Navarrete. Remember the long count. Hard-punching Australian guy. Happy to see him get another crack at it. Like this main event from Top Rank.
I do, too. I mean, I like Oscar Valdez. I always have. Curious to see how much he has left in his career. You got a guy in Liam Wilson, man. That guy can punch with that left hand. That left hook is a dangerous thing. And Valdez is a hooker, too. So whenever you have hookers fighting, they always say, don't hook with a hooker. You better jab with a jabber, but don't hook with a hooker. And Liam Smith probably has the bigger left hook in the two. And Oscar Valdez is a great left hook.
Dude, that could be upset special. What's the odds?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a very dangerous fight. And again, I bring it up again. How much does Oscar Valdez have left? How much does he really want to be in there?
He was like... Remember some of the... What was that war he was in way back? 2018?
Scott Puig.
Dude. Jeez. When he was in on the stretcher. Ooh. That's when I was like, yo, this guy's on his way to...
pouring blood, jaw cracked in half, teeth all mangled up. Yeah, no, he's a warrior. He's an absolute warrior. But, I mean, dude, moving up in weight classes is tough, man. These the bigger guys, things change.
Liam Wilson is a plus 310 underdog in this fight. Yeah. I would assume
he'd be an underdog, but that's a good play.
That is a good play. Sinisa Estrada is fighting Yoka Val. This is a undisputed fight at 108 pounds. I think this is going to be a fun one. Raymond Morataya.
Yes.
The dark horse at 135 pounds is fighting a name that I'm going to try to – I'm going to just try here. It's Zolisani. Zoli? Zolsani? Drejoni?
That sounded pretty good to me.
Okay. He's, what do we got here? For Morataya is the dark horse. He's got 16 knockouts in 19 fights. Tim Bradley thinks he could beat the top lightweights today. This Drejoni fella, 31-4. He was stopped by Barboza. Devin Haney beat him by unanimous decision. I like Morataya. I watch him, and I will see what he's got and then try to assess him at 135.
I very high in Morataya. I think that he's going to be a major player very, very soon. I don't think this fight is going to make or break him in any way. I think he's going to do what he does, probably get the knockout, probably look spectacular. But still, he's outside of that VIP group, unfortunately. But he's got the skills.
He'll get a spectacular knockout, and our guy Joe Tess, who's probably listening right now, will give us one hell of a call.
Oh, as always. That guy doesn't miss. So
I can hear it right now from Joe Tess. Richard Torres, Emiliano Vargas, not fighting each other because they are separated by about 100 pounds. But maybe Richard more. Torres, like him, Emiliano Vargas, like him. This is a top rank does best. They stack the card.
Yeah, Emiliano is one of my favorite top prospects in the world today. I think he's absolutely fantastic. Dude, the kid is a star. He is already a star. He's got everything. He's got the looks. He talks the talk. He fights the fight. He fights like his dad. Like, he gets in there. Like, he's looking to knock you out. And he's not worried about getting hit either. Like, he'll be in there. He puts his nose on the line. Super impressed with him in his development so far. Richard Torres, I'm waiting for him to step up and fight someone who can actually, you know, fight back. Haven't seen that yet. But yeah, no, this is a top ranked card, man. They build their prospects better than everybody in the world. They stack their cards. Everyone gets to know every fighter that they have on their stable because they fill the entire card up. So mm-hmm. It's a very smart move. Bob knows what he's doing. He's the Bob Brother for a reason.
Dude, they have such a great stable. Like,
always.
Emiliano Vargas, Bruce Carrington, Raymond mm-hmm. Morataya, who's the other guy? Abdullah Mason, Xander Zayas. And those are just the guys that are like at this right below the elite.
They're all
level.
Under 23 years old.
Dude, they got such a bright future. Top rank can just keep doing this. This is what they do best. They can just get this talent and finesse the talent. What they struggle with, I don't know if it's struggling or it's just like a business, not to get deep into this right now, but a business perspective they have is, you know, they don't make the big giant fight. They'll get a guy to a certain point and then, you know, he's gone.
He usually leaves.
They're gone.
He usually sues them and leaves and goes and fights a mega fight somewhere
else. They might be fine with that business model.
Overtime
Boxing returns on Friday on DAZN. Then we have Zerto Ramirez fighting for a WBA cruiserweight title. A guy that has stepped into the ring as high as 210 pounds while fighting at light heavyweight is jumping up to cruiserweight. Like that move for Zerto. Like Zerto. Good guy. I don't know what the future is at cruiser. Don't know many of the names at cruiser besides Jai Opatai. But Zerto is probably looking for Jai Opatai because that's where the money's at.
Yeah, I mean, it's an opportunity for him to pick up a world title at cruiserweight. He looked good against Joe Smith. Joe was always a dangerous guy, and Zerto was just busy and worked really well behind the jab, good body shots, so let those hands go. I like Zerto, too. You know, he's completely outclassed by Bivol. But I think him at cruiserweight is a very dangerous guy.
All right, folks, that is our show. Very thorough show today. Gave you some betting tips. We're going to be in Las Vegas. We're going to be in the chat on Saturday night. Order the fight on PPV.com. It's a stacked card from top to bottom. I think it's one of those cards where if you don't order it, you're going to be like, oh, shit, I have FOMO because there's been knockouts all over it, and we haven't even gotten to the main event. So that's the deal. Hope you have a great week, Chris. Anything you got planned for the week?
No, man, just doing that boxing thing 24/7. That's such is life, man.
So no what
boxing,
we
no
do
life,
now,
right?
Man.
That's all we do.
That's all we do. Even when I was at John Boy, I mixed in some baseball. Yankees start Thursday, opening day for baseball. And when I was at John Boy, I was burning that on both ends. You know, I was doing a lot of baseball coverage. I was doing boxing. Now I'm 100% boxing. I'm going to watch baseball like how I should, you know, just like a regular fan and not have to worry about covering it.
I used to, you know, doing nutrition, writing books, doing all these other. Now it is full time boxing, and everything overlaps, so it's good. It's making me that much better at disseminating boxing information.
You're doing a great job, Chris. We love you here at Inside Boxing Live. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. See you in Vegas, everybody.